walk in here.
Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Tuesday, to get you through the coronavirus crisis. In a world where few things are reliable, we are. So Jason Rancho live on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. We got a lot to get to. We only have an hour left to do it. After shootings and robberies and suicide at a local encampment, city council decides to fight to save said encampment. You're going to be shocked at the business that's staying open in the city of Spokane, plus an angry customer gets kicked out of a Costco for refusing to wear a mask. We're going to play that audio for you. This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home, so let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
There is an encampment in South Seattle in District 2, which is represented by socialist Tammy Morales. This is an encampment that is pretty massive, huge. I spent some time looking at the video and the photos that were taken by Como today. 60 tents or so over the course of about two blocks. That is a lot. And it's made worse because it's around a low barrier shelter called the Navigation Center, which technically you're not allowed to use drugs in, but they do. And you certainly can use drugs around the Navigation Center. And that's exactly what's going on. But it's not just the drug use that's out of control. It is the fact that over the last 3 weeks, there have been three shootings nearby. Three. That's a lot. A suicide. Several thefts. Several robberies. Oh, and that whole thing about a body being found in the remains of a burned out house that's just around the corner from this encampment. That seems problematic. One might think this gives you enough ammunition to justify sweeping it, breaking it up, offering folks services, offering folks someplace to go, but saying, no, you can't be here. But that would be, that's such a silly thought. That would be a thought for a city that acts within reason. Not Seattle.
I've had some deep skepticism about this practice in the city.
Tammy Morales has had some deep skepticism about the navigation sweeps. She wants to keep people exactly where they are. In fact, like so many others on this council, she would prefer we service them where they are. Bring the sanitation centers to them. Bring the mobile heroin injection sites to where they are. Maybe throw in a massage or two. So now Tammy Morales and the Seattle City Council is trying to codify into law a set of practices, guidance, that would make it harder to engage in these sweeps. That's what she's trying to do, and that's what likely will happen. That is a shame. We need more sweeps, not less. We need more sweeps, not less. Because right now, letting people sit on a sidewalk, in a bush, under a freeway, in a park, in an alleyway, is not actually helping them. It's not actually getting them off the streets. It's not actually getting them on the path to self-sufficiency. It's making things worse. More so, it is devastating communities. Donald Marr owns three buildings in this area. Listen to him talk about his neighborhood.
There's so much crime here. It's just, it's unbearable. It's almost like we're under siege.
It's almost like we're under siege. Think about that right now, regardless of where you live. Let's say you're in Bellevue. Let's say you're listening right now in Port Orchard or Enumclaw or Everett. And for a moment, you walk outside of your home or outside of your business, and all of a sudden, you are surrounded by tents with people who are shooting up, with people who very clearly are dealing with mental health issues or an addiction problem. Imagine what it must feel like overnight, losing what you love, losing what you care about most, realizing that now your kids are walking through all of this. Understand what that might feel like. This is happening to so many people. So many people. in Seattle. And it's not just staying in Seattle. We've seen these problems take shape in Puyallup and Olympia and Tacoma. Because we're of this belief, or I should say, I suppose, progressives are of this belief, that you can't really move any of these folks. They have the right to be wherever it is they want to be. Here's Mayor Jenny Durkan.
One of the truths is that people have the right to choose where they are, and we cannot force, absent some other reason, to move people inside.
That is not true. She is making reference, it would appear, to this appeals court ruling about a year and a half ago that said you can't just remove people from these encampments. Well, you can remove them if you have a shelter for them to go to. That's what the ruling actually says. That's what the law says. It's not that, oh, they don't want to move, so I guess we're out of luck. I guess can't do anything. By the way, take that approach to not paying your taxes. See what happens. I don't want to pay. Oh, well, there's nothing we can do. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you don't want to pay, you don't have to pay. I don't want to leave my apartment that you're trying to boot me out of. I don't know what we can do. They get to stay wherever they get to stay. When it comes to us saps who play by the rules, who pay our taxes, we get hosed. But when it comes to homeless individuals who are breaking the law, who are refusing to take us up on our offers of support, we get a whole bunch of, well, here's another excuse as to why we're allowing them to do whatever it is they do. But they clearly are still doing some of these sweeps.
The CDC guidelines and our guidance made very clear that we would do our number one priority would be outreach to people experiencing homelessness.
But they say no. They say no because she let them. You know what you don't have the right to do under the homelessness guidance coming from the courts? You don't have the right to shoot up in a park in front of kids. Yet that's happening. You don't have the right to stalk people who are wandering by. You don't have the right to spit at them. You don't have the right to set up your encampment in front of a business so that the business owner can't even get into their own property. You don't have that right. Unless you're in Seattle, where we give rights to people that don't deserve it. Rights to people that aren't going to help get them off of the streets. There is no sense of urgency to get these folks off the streets. And that's the sad part of all of this. Every day that individual is sleeping outside in a park under a freeway is a day that they're closer to a premature death. It's one day further away from getting on that right path. And these council members seem to be okay with that. They seem to be okay with that. Now, if you don't think that's right, ask yourself, listening right now in Squim or Mukilteo or on Vashon Island, think to yourself, ask yourself, are you doing enough to make sure people like Jenny Durkan or Tammy Morales aren't in positions of power to make these decisions over you? And it's not just a question to be asked surrounding homelessness. Think about the coronavirus. Is Governor Jay Inslee, is he doing things the way you want him to do them? Is he acting in a way that you want him to act? Do you think he's tackling this problem well? Now, I'm assuming that the vast majority of you, from Sumner to Spanaway, Bellingham to Vancouver, you're going to be saying to yourself, no, I am sick of it. I'm going to write a snarky tweet. I'm going to send a Facebook post. I need you to do a little bit more than that. I need you to volunteer for the candidates who you trust to change policy. I need you to donate money to the candidates that you believe can get this state and your cities on the right path. I need you to make sure that you're committing your time to elevating their message, because if you don't, literally nothing's going to change for the better. Quite the opposite. The slow creep of bad policies in Seattle will continue down into Kirkland, into Arlington, into Milton, the gem of Pierce County. So if you're not okay with that, here's your chance right now to speak up and get more involved. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Let me know your thoughts. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The economy.
So there's a quote here in the Inlander by a woman by the name of Kim Arota. She is the owner of Northtown Auto Liquidators. She's decided to follow the guidance. Good for her. She's doing this because she thinks it's in the best interest of the public to close her business. The quote is, even during the pandemic, they were open the whole time. She's talking about a neighboring business. They were open the whole time. What kind of business do you think she's talking about? A pot shop, maybe? Gym? A casino? Because they're starting to open up, and some gyms, I'm told, didn't even close down. She's talking about Zone Erotica. It's a sex shop.
Essential.
Yeah. They were open the whole time. According to the Inlander, the employee on duty at Zone Erotica's front desk says that during the pandemic, they've actually seen an increase in sales. This actually kind of makes sense to me. An uptick in customers who stop by looking for lubricant, condoms, sex contraptions, and more. The employee said sex is essential for mental and physical health. I mean, what else are you going to do when you're stuck at home? I don't think I can argue with that statement.
I can't.
That actually is a very sound and valid statement, just from at least a common sense perspective. Now, according to the state, they do not qualify, and they're supposed to be closed. But it is kind of interesting where we talk about, you know, the essentials at a time where we're talking about a pandemic, which means we're talking about health. Talking about our health. Well, having sex with your partner, whom you're in a committed relationship to, provides certainly therapeutic aspects that keep you healthy. Same thing like going to the gym. The argument we've heard from these gym owners or yoga instructors is this is actually good for their health. So I wonder why it doesn't or wouldn't apply to this kind of shop. Other than some folks saying, I have a moral objection to them with respect. Those are your morals, and it doesn't mean you get to dictate what businesses get to open or close. But again, this is technically supposed to be closed. They say a notice taped to the rear entrance of the shop insists that the store is exempt from closing, noting they sell federally designated essential medical devices. What devices might those be? I was thinking to myself as I was reading this story in the Inlander. The notice says any government agency not following federal law will be sued for loss of income. The owner is a 78-year-old named Coyle. He makes a simple argument for why his stores should be able to remain open. Those devices that vibrate, condoms, and some of the other devices are essential medical products. He says vibrators were once used to treat sinus infections and headaches.
It's a cure. He found the cure.
Who among us has not used it in that circumstance? He says he knows from personal experience that the Veterans Administration has sometimes provided veterans with devices to deal with erectile dysfunction that he sells. This is actually, I wonder if he has actually found a loophole.
I think he did. This guy's...
Good for him. Again, I'm not going to bemoan a company that's trying to stay afloat during trying times if they're doing things in a safe way. And I don't believe the simple existence of a business opening up during a stay-at-home order is inherently unsafe. I don't. I'm assuming they're doing things the right way. I'm hoping they're doing things the right way. But this lady across the street is all like, they should close down.
Karen.
And it kind of sounds like she's been complaining a lot. I think her name is Karen. Is she a Karen?
Sounds like a Karen to me.
What's a Karen again?
A Karen is somebody who complains about everything, even though there's nothing wrong going on.
Relax, lady. We just call them Karen.
Do you think that this shop will be using, you know, the condoms to prevent babies? Or do you think that we're going to have a huge baby spike in 9 months due to the lockdown?
It is kind of interesting. I was thinking about this the other day because there was some story positing the same question where you've got a whole bunch of people who are bored. Will we have like a coronavirus baby bump in 9 months from now? But I do wonder that in the back of their minds, they have to understand that economically, it's not the best time to be having a kid, most likely. Or at least there's more evidence than not that things are not going to just immediately get better. And so I'm wondering if they are paying close attention to that. You know, by closing up the sex shops. I mean, granted, you can go to a Bartels and buy condoms and stuff, but still.
Man, I think there's going to be a huge spike.
You know what I think?
What's that?
We should find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
People are not happy with Costco because, as a general rule for Costco, they are requiring you to wear a mask. Conservatives should not be upset with this. You can say that the policy is silly. You can say that it's not the right move. But they are a private business, and they actually get to decide whether or not they are going to implement that rule. Jason, it's a membership. Yes, it is. If you don't like the rules, I imagine you can say, please give me a prorated rate back for what I'm not going to spend because I'm done with you. I'm okay with an individual business deciding because I want them to succeed. And regardless of how you personally feel at home about wearing masks, understand that there are a lot of people who believe that this is not just necessary, but it's tantamount. They will not go into a business unless people are safe and covering their mouth with a mask or a cloth. I want the businesses to get more people visiting, not less. And if you are for just a couple minutes during your shopping experience in a position where you have to wear a mask and it's uncomfortable, I do think you should weigh the positives to that, which is people get to keep their jobs, a business gets to stay open, the economy continues to move forward. There are some people who are choosing to purposefully taunt employees at Costco or at different grocery stores because they don't feel like they should have to wear their masks. Here's another one.
I just put you on my 3,000 follower Instagram feed.
Hold on. Did this guy just say he's going to show his Instagram feed, this video, with just 3,000 people? Did he say 3,000 or 30,000? Let's listen.
I just put you on my 3,000
followers. No, he says 3,000 followers.
And he doesn't have 3,000. No way.
Dude, that ain't impressive. Just throwing it out there.
He doesn't have 3,000.
Even if you had the 3,000, that's not an impressive number.
I have like 900.
You come back to me, sir, when you've got in the tens of thousands. Not 3,000. With that said, I've got an Instagram and people should follow me. It's at Jason Rantz, JSONRENTZ. On Instagram, I don't have 3,000, which actually, because I don't really use it all that much and I don't promote it. So let's get me to the 3,000.
For Instagram feed, mostly locals.
Hi, everyone. I work for Costco.
Mostly locals. And you know what? I am a thought leader in my community. These 3,000 souls come to me for guidance. And when I tell them to do something, or I think in this case, not do something, like not chop here, they will listen to me. Random dude with 3,000 followers on Instagram, some of whom actually are porn robots that I paid Fiverr to give me 5,000 extra there, and then a lot of them got disconnected because Instagram realized that they were fake.
I'm asking this member to put on a mask because that is our company policy. So either wear the mask or...
And I'm not doing it because I woke up in a free country.
And part of living in a free country means a business is free to have reasonable standards for their customer base. Now, if they decided to say, we're not going to let you in because you are black or Jewish or gay, I will join you. I will give you a like on Instagram and become your 3001 fan. And I will get behind you. But this whole idea that Costco, a private company, does not have the right to do this is, of course, silly. My assumption is he's conservative because generally conservatives have a stronger take on wanting to push back against government regulations, and I will join him in that. If the government came out there and wanted to force you into wearing a mask, I would say I don't think that's appropriate. But in this case, it is.
Hey, have a great day.
So you're going to take this car from me.
Sir, have a great
full
day.
Full of stuff.
We're no longer warehouse.
Oh, he's pulling the cart away. I am curious. The dude clearly went through the Costco and put items in his cart. They're not allowing people into the Costco if you don't have your mask. Something tells me this phony put on a mask to get in, do some shopping, and then at the end pulled off a mask to see what would happen for his 3,000 Instagram followers.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more, Jason.
His cart was full of stuff. His cart wasn't just like one thing on the way in and maybe he snuck through because there was just this onslaught of people coming in, which isn't happening at Costco's now because of the policies in place. He's a phony.
He is, and he's wearing sunglasses indoors, which is another thing that we should address.
Yeah, we just stopped that. The only thing that's worse than that is wearing socks with sandals. Let's not do the socks with sandals nor the sunglasses indoors, and certainly not at the same time, dude.
You need to leave. Thank you very much.
You put it on. I'll give you my card. He's going to take the card away because he's a f***y little There he is, walking away with all my stuff.
With your stuff.
There he goes. Because I'm not a f***ing sheep.
Well, and you're also disrespectful and you don't want to follow the rules of a private business. I mean, there's also that. I don't think you are a sheep. And I don't think you are somehow weak by listening and obeying a rule that a private company that you have no right to visit, that they clearly don't have a lock on all the... It's not like you can only go to this place to get your 3-gallon... Well, to get the 3-gallon jug of mayonnaise, that's probably the only place you can go. But you can get groceries elsewhere.
And that 3-gallon jug of mayonnaise is a constitutional right.
I hate so much people who do this kind of stunt. This is not a stunt that's based in a moral value. This is not pushing against the government and an overreach. This is pushing against a private business. If you don't like the policies, don't shop there. I will choose to not shop at businesses that have policies I don't like. And you know what? Maybe I'll go on Twitter and say, I don't like this policy. I'm not going to go there. But I'm not going to post to my 3,000-strong Instagram account. He's trolling for Instagram accounts. To follows. That's what he's doing. What's his name?
They don't say I look.
Exactly! We can't even find him on Instagram. It's the Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's funny that on the one hand, I'll give people a hard time on the Costco mask, but I won't give you a hard time when a government agency comes out with their guidance, because sometimes the guidance is kind of silly. This comes from the Washington State Department of Health, the DOH, otherwise known as DOE. DOE came out with a really, really bad piece of advice. They want parents to wear a mask while doing dishes or folding laundry. Now, they want you to do this not because it's going to save you from the coronavirus. They want parents to do this because it normalizes the use of masks and then will get their kids, your kids, to feel more comfortable wearing a mask when they need to. I don't think that's very good advice, but let's dive into this. They say, leave your cloth face covering where your child can see it. Wear it while doing simple tasks like washing dishes or folding laundry so that it becomes normal. Now, I am not a doctor and I am not a parent. I have, as I said earlier, seen every single episode of House, and I do know some parents. I try to stay away from their annoying kids because I don't like kids, but I do have some frame of reference on both of these topics. I think this is bad advice. First of all, the guidance that we're getting from King County and Whatcom County and from the state is to wear these cloth coverings outside, not inside. Model that mask behavior where you're more at risk, most at risk of the coronavirus. Because that's where you want the kids wearing the mask, not indoors, unless you've got the mask on 24/7. Anytime you take it off in an enclosed space at home means you're going to be exposed to the coronavirus anyway. So you might as well just not wear it there. But second, wearing a mask, be it an N95 mask or a bandana, it's uncomfortable. It's hard to breathe in. It can be itchy. For those of us who have large heads because we have big brains and egos, the elastic that goes around your ears can be quite tight. Why would you want to torment your stupid kid, I mean your lovable kid who's amazing in every way, with a mask indoors when it's not part of the guidance? And third, and most importantly, we should not be normalizing wearing a mask. It is not normal. It should not be normal. This is temporary. This is during a pandemic. Wearing a mask to protect a kid from a dangerous virus is going to be scary to them. That means they're going to be scared when the mask is on. Do you want them to be scared in the house and outside of the house? You are literally telling kids that there is this menacing, invisible virus that is going to kill grandma if they are exposed to it. Do you think when the pandemic is over, they're going to be less scared that the virus they can't see, you tell them, is gone? They're not going to believe you. Why won't they believe you? You do realize kids know that adults lie to them, and they know you're lying to them. And I will say that I saw the movie The Happening, which is M. Night Shyamalan's least successful movie, I suppose, both from a box office standpoint, but also from a review standpoint. And in that movie, there was an invisible killer, a villain. You know who it was? Nature! It was the wind. And it killed everybody, and you couldn't see it unless you're looking at a branch, and the branch starts to move around, or you're looking at a tree, and then it kills you if you're outside. Not if you're inside, which is weird, because it's not like you have perfect ability to keep all the air outside. But if you're inside, you're fine. If you're outside, it'll kill you. And it was like an eco-terrorism movie or an eco-horror movie. To this day, I'm freaked out. And that was invisible. Imagine these stupid kids.
The wind is what scares you because of M. Night Shyamalan?
Yeah, when it's windy, I run indoors so quickly.
You're a piece of work, Rance.
I'm a Pisces. Meanwhile, Joe Biden. Oh, by the way, if you want to help me shine a spotlight on this dumb Facebook post that Doe has out there, text the keyword Rance, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. So Joe Biden was on recently today, not long ago, Yahoo News. And he was asked about Tara Reid. And this is not a good look for Joe Biden.
So okay. I want to ask you just very simply, Mr. Vice President, if you have watched any of Tara Reid's interviews, like the one she did with Megyn Kelly?
No, I haven't, but I've been asked about her.
Just real quick. You're not curious at all about the interview? You didn't watch it. It's a 45-minute interview. I watched the whole thing. It's a very good interview. It's a little uncomfortable and a little awkward. Again, I don't know where I stand specifically on believing her or not. I think she has a compelling case. She certainly has a more compelling case than Dr. Blasey Ford because of the evidence she has of at least telling people about it decades ago. If you are credibly accused of raping a woman, and you know that it is serious enough that it could completely derail your entire campaign, you don't watch any of it, not even a little bit.
Why is that?
I haven't had an opportunity, and I haven't.
You haven't had an opportunity. You are in your basement all day, every day. You're not on the campaign trail. You are staying indoors. You are hiding out. You have 24 hours each and every day. You can't find any time. This is the equivalent of someone saying, I don't have time to work out. Yes, you do. You just don't want to. You've got 20 minutes. You can go do lunges during the commercial breaks of TV shows, which is one of those dumb tips that most magazines will tell people. Why don't you do some exercise during the commercials? No, I'm watching TV. I don't want to do lunges. Lunges hurt my legs. How about squats? Same thing. You don't have any time, Joe Biden?
Look, here's the deal.
Oh, okay.
Every woman has a right to be heard.
Okay.
Every woman should be able to come forward. Every woman should be presumed that they were telling the truth.
Okay. I'm presuming she's telling the truth and you're a rapist. If that's what you believe. Or it's not really what you believe.
And then it should be investigated by serious reporters like you.
Whoa. Hold on. It should be investigated by reporters, but not the police? I mean, I'm going to assume he's going to follow up, but also say law enforcement. Should that not be like the first group of people that investigate?
And others to determine what the truth is.
Whoa, he didn't even say law enforcement. Reporters and others. Who's the others? Why is it up to a reporter to investigate whether or not you rape someone? The reporter that he's talking to with Yahoo News, I'm sorry, I don't know who she is. She's a great reporter. Who is she? Is she tried and tested in looking into allegations of rape? Continue.
And the truth is, this never, ever happened. It never, ever happened. And what I'm reading now online and what I'm seeing in the national press, apparently there's a lot of other people are wondering whether or not it happened. It's not my role to ascribe a motive to anything she's done or not done, except to assure you, it never, ever, ever happened. That's the truth of it.
Oh, well, that's settled. Because you know what I've never heard? Someone accused of rape who actually did it, denying that he did it. We've never heard that. Same thing with all crimes. When you ask someone, sir, did you murder that person? I did not do that. Oh, our mistake. Please leave. I'm sorry for arresting you. Let's hug it out. I let bygones be bygones. My bad. I'm out. Did you not know that that's how it works?
I didn't get a degree in law, so I wasn't sure about that. I got a degree in communications.
I have a politics degree, so I know a thing or two. And again, I've watched almost every episode of Law and Order, the original, not the garbage ones after that. The originals. And that's how it works.
Good to know.
How it works. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Coming up next, the Michael Flynn controversy just got more controversial. How so? Jenna Ellis is going to stop by. She is the president's attorney in just a couple moments. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The Michael Flynn controversy is no longer just about the abuse from the Obama administration or the bad actors within the FBI. It's now being focused on the judge of the case, ignoring a basic rule of law. Joining me with her analysis is the president's attorney, Jenna Ellis. Jenna, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So on FoxNews.com, you take issue with the judge. His name is Emmett Sullivan. Take us through how you think he's handling the case now that the DOJ has said, we want the charges dropped.
Yeah, well, this is a purely constitutional matter because the separation of powers requires that the decision to prosecute or not prosecute is resided solely within the executive branch. That is entirely the Department of Justice's decision and discretion. And so for Judge Sullivan to wait on to rule on the motion to dismiss and actually grant these amicus filings or the so-called friend of the court and ask for any other information to be on the record as to why he shouldn't grant this motion, there's no legal justification for it. A judge should not be in the position of telling the government, you need to prosecute this case. Judge Sullivan is basically removing his robe as an independent judicial arbiter and stepping into the shoes of a prosecutor. That's absolutely not permitted in our constitutional separation of powers.
Playing devil's advocate for a moment, is it possible that he's doing this to show the American people that the Trump administration and the DOJ is not just getting their wish, as it's seen already from folks on the left and in the media on the left, as political, that he's going through the motions and will still just end up siding with the DOJ, but he wants to make sure that people don't view this as inherently political?
Not at all. And the reason for that is because the rules don't allow him to have that kind of safeguard. If he was truly interested in simply performing his judicial role, then he needs to ignore whatever the media and the political narrative is saying and grant the motion because the Department of Justice is the prosecutor. And so by allowing this, he's actually ignoring the federal rules of criminal procedure, which he himself has actually ruled on in the Flynn case a prior 24 times, saying and even citing the rule that amicus filings are not permitted under the rule. And that was when the amici in the case wanted to present things that were pro-Flynn. And so now he's actually reversing himself in the same case by allowing political statements that are against Flynn to be put on the record and delaying genuine justice. So there's absolutely no reason why he should be doing this other than a political maneuver.
Just joining us, we're talking with Jenna Ellis. She is the senior legal strategist for the Trump 2020 reelection campaign, a lawyer for the president. We're talking about the Michael Flynn controversy and the moves by Judge Emmett Sullivan in this case. Where do we stand right now with this DOJ move?
Yeah, well, the news broke earlier today that Michael Flynn's attorney, Sidney Powell, who is, by the way, one of the most brilliant legal minds, she's hitting back really hard against Judge Sullivan's preposterous delay and filed an emergency petition for a writ of mandamus, which basically in non-legal speak just means that she's requesting the appeals court to now intervene and force and require Judge Sullivan to actually follow the law. Because he has gone so far outside the bounds, now she's asking the higher court to intervene and to require and order this judge to follow the law, to dismiss the case based on the Department of Justice's motion. And she also asked for a reassignment of the case to another district court judge for any further proceedings, which once the case is dismissed, there really shouldn't be any further proceedings. But it's entirely correct to ask that this judge be removed. And frankly, he should be removed from the bench as well. That's not a part of her petition, but that's something that clearly this judge, Judge Sullivan, has just gone so far outside his oath of office and the judicial branch. And by the way, I would be saying this regardless of who the defendant in the case is, because as a former prosecutor, as a former defense attorney, I've been in criminal courtrooms on both sides of the bench, and our adversarial system requires that the judge is a neutral, independent party.
How common is this kind of filing? Because I imagine going to this extreme, if it doesn't work with the appeals court and it ends up getting tossed back to this judge, you basically said, we don't trust you, you're not doing your job, there can be some repercussions. I know they're not supposed to be, but there very clearly can be.
Well, I think that then this will just be appealed higher, but you know, but ultimately, this judge knows that he's on precarious ground here, and this type of filing, the writ at least, it's unfortunate that it even needs to go this far, and you know, frankly, the judge should have just granted the Department of Justice's motion to dismiss. As a prosecutor, with prosecutorial discretion, there were many times that for reasons similar to here in Flynn, where there's new evidence that comes out, or if there was any, you know, Brady issue with a case that I was looking at, I mean, as the prosecutor, you're required to turn over exculpatory evidence. And if there was ever a question of that, I mean, I never did that, of course, as a prosecutor, but if there's ever any question of that, of course you dismiss the case. And so those types of prosecutorial discretion issues happen all the time. And if the prosecutor moves to dismiss a case, it's routinely granted by the court because the court says, you know, hey, I can't force the government to prosecute their decision. This is a dispute between the state and the defendant. And so it's just routinely granted, no questions asked.
So obviously we know that this has become political, and we can safely assume that Judge Emmett Sullivan is no longer that objective judge in this case based on just some of the facts. Could this pressure backfire, the pressure that you're putting on him, any of the surrogates from the campaign or any Republican out there, isn't it possible that he can look at what's going on and just dig in his heels even more? And ultimately, I know that you believe that this is going to be overturned if the judge decided for some reason to rule against the government's motion, which would be obscene and unheard of almost. But at some point, where is that feeling of at least concern that this could end up just dragging this out longer and longer and longer?
Well, you know, even if that is a substantial concern, hopefully, again, this is why at the district court level you have appellate courts that will review and reverse clearly erroneous decisions from the lower court. So that's a method of relief, but also the fact that the Department of Justice has now said they're not going to prosecute, then this is just merely justice that's being delayed. It's not ultimately going to be denied. And especially because this case is now so prominently in front of the American people, we all deserve to have legitimacy and faith in our judicial officers. And so frankly, this is something that could very well backfire on the judge and have his credibility questioned in all of his further decisions. And, you know, judges should never want to play those types of prominent political games. That's not their job. That's actually antithetical to their oath of office.
So last question for you. With this writ of mandamus, assuming it goes in the favor of Michael Flynn, what kind of timeline are we now working with as far as getting this settled?
Well, so this is an emergency motion, meaning that you know, the court's dockets are generally fairly slow in reviewing just regular petitions that could take months. But because this is designated, rightfully so, as more of an urgent filing, then according, you know, to the rules in the district court, it will likely proceed on that timeline. And hopefully this will just be a matter of days or weeks before the appellate court will rule on this motion.
Well, fingers crossed. This is absolutely absurd. I think anyone who objectively looks at the facts of how the Michael Flynn case even became the Michael Flynn case can look at this and clearly say there was some malfeasance. We've been talking with Jana Ellis, President Trump's personal attorney, but also a senior campaign advisor on the legal side for the reelection campaign. Jana, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho, by the way. If you want to check out her piece, it's available at foxnews.com. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Really appreciate it.